Good morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And today we're going to talk about the Dubai startup founder nobody wants to touch, Amazon investing $4 billion in the rival of OpenAI, and a Dutch company has sparked outrage with dissolvable Quran paper. A developer is going to donate $163 million to build a school complex in Dubai. Abu Dhabi will spend $10 billion in tourism to nearly double their hotel rooms. And Supercar Blondie is looking to raise over $100 million after refusing a buyout deal. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Money, money, money.
Money, money, money.
That's my favorite song. Money, money, money.
Should be the soundtrack to the show. Or to your life, maybe.
To my life. Yeah, yeah. That's giving people the wrong idea about me, Richard, but thanks.
How's it going? How's your week been?
Friday? Yeah, yeah, it's going good.
Any highlights? Any highlights of the week? What's the best moment?
Any highlights? I don't know. I feel like I have to start becoming more politically correct, but then there's no fun in that, is there?
No.
So I don't know. Someone left a comment under the Dubai startup founder that nobody wants to touch story, and they said, because we didn't name the founder, obviously, for reasons that are obvious to a lot of people, and they said, why are you sharing this without telling us? Why are you talking about nobody and not telling us who this person is, blah, blah, blah? And I said, some people can read between the lines, and then there's you.
Ouch. Yeah, so let's jump into it then. Yeah,
that was my favorite line because, I mean, obviously there's a reason we didn't name this founder, right? But let's talk a little bit about this story. The headline was, don't let him anywhere near the payroll. What did you think of that story? There's basically a Dubai startup founder. He worked in various industries, including F&B for a long time and then tech as well. And he's allegedly embezzled funds from quite a lot of people.
Yeah, I think there's enough in that story and there's enough track record there to, and there's enough people who have come across it that warrant, you know, I look at it, but look at the industry. You know, Lubna, I was thinking about this overnight or this morning before the show, and it reminded me of like what happens in the US, and particularly Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX, who's this week been handed a sentence of 25 years in jail.
Yeah.
And it could have been 50. And you know what? He spoke for the first time since we've seen him in handcuffs and, you know, in the court or whatever. And this has been going on for about a year and a half. I think FTX went down in around November 2022 or whatever.
Yeah.
A month after he was in Riyadh for the FII conference or so. But you know, the quote they came out with this week was, I never once thought I was doing something illegal. And I actually believe him. I don't think they realize the negative impact they're having on people and society with their actions. And I think that's why a story like this is important, because, you know, I think that people in companies, either in startup world or in FTX crypto environment, or even in bigger organizations, but negligent bosses and leaders and CEOs and people, or even just bosses at different levels, not being professional, not doing things by the book, cutting corners, doing all sorts of malpractice, like what you would call white collar crimes in the US. They're never held accountable. And we see it brings down sectors, it brings down industries. Enron brought down the accounting world. It brings down like what happened in Facebook, like it brings down things. And I always say the law will hold people to account and we don't have to, but sometimes media can shed light on information that doesn't exist. And I think the story that you've done does sort of, hopefully, it will sort of remind people that if you raise money, you do have a responsibility, a fiduciary responsibility in some respects, but you have a responsibility to your investors and you have a responsibility to your employees. And some of these employees, like you'll do a follow-up today, some of these employees have mortgages to pay.
Yeah,
they have kids
absolutely.
To feed. And
yeah.
And if you, in the middle of it, if you, like Sam Bankman-Fried said, at no point did I know I was doing anything wrong. Then there's something wrong.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great line. What one of the quotes that really gave me the chills, and when I was speaking to this person, he said, people were so surprised by it because he would shake your hand and look you in the eye after he stole from you. He's not a typical criminal who you would never ever hear from again. I bet if he saw me tomorrow, he would pretend nothing ever happened. And that just goes to say about what you're saying, that yeah, they probably don't think that they're doing anything wrong, or they know all along and perhaps they just don't care.
Yeah. I think we talked recently about, you know, the region having lots of good founders and evolving in startup space and being better at communications as they go and listed companies and all that sort of stuff. And I think this is part of it. I think, failing openly and publicly and learning from it, but also realizing that your actions do have consequences, and that also there is a level of responsibility as well. Let's see how that one develops further.
Yeah, I'm going to read one last thing from the slide. You can check out the story on the carousel on the Instagram feed of Smashy Business. But one thing that's really interesting, he said, one former colleague said the stress of working alongside the co-founder caused him to become an alcoholic. Another one is currently under a travel ban as a result of debt he acquired due to missed salary payments. I mean, it really does change your life massively. Anyway, we're going to move on because, Richard, you're a busy, busy man and you have to leave in just a couple of minutes.
And we covered that story well. And you packed it with like 50 stories today. Yeah.
Amazon is investing $4 billion in the rival of OpenAI. It's largest external investment ever. It's allocating $2.75 billion to Anthropic, a San Francisco-based AI startup. It's cool to see Amazon really pushing when it comes to AI. So Anthropic is known for its generative AI model Claude, which competes directly with industry leaders OpenAI and ChatGPT. This investment follows an initial $1.25 billion funding round in September. So the total will amount to $4 billion. What do you think of Amazon going into this?
Yeah, it's good. I wonder, did Amazon need to invest? They obviously feel like they need to. Amazon had a lot of AI offerings already, I guess
they're getting greedy, maybe.
Maybe I don't know. I'd never heard of Anthropic. I don't know all the different players in a $4 billion company, AI company. It shows that this is still the hot space. Mm-hmm. People, we talked a lot, Lubna, about partnerships in AI, and now we're looking at acquisitions. There was another headline I read that Google were looking to invest in, not AI, but looking to acquire HubSpot, a marketing type mm-hmm. software. And I think what we're seeing lately is that the big tech, maybe they have a vote of confidence that the antitrust isn't going to get them, but we're seeing more talk of M&A by big tech. Right. And it's slowed down, right? These $5-10 billion investments slowed down. Like, when's the last time Amazon spent over $4 billion on a company? Like, mm-hmm. we haven't seen this. And I think, even Facebook and Microsoft, they haven't been buying companies. Microsoft's deal, the deal for the gaming company was blocked. Mm-hmm. So we've seen a lot of antitrust stuff blocking competition rule. And, Amazon's history, Bezos' history is buying up little companies, some working and some dying.
Yeah.
And so I am not surprised to see some AI acquisitions actually in hindsight.
Yeah, right. So there's a Dutch company that's, as usual, the Dutch are sparking outrage left and right when it comes to religion. So they're sparking outrage with dissolvable Quran paper. So basically it's, you open a bag and inside it is a dissolvable Quran paper with Quranic verses, basically religious verses. You put them in water, they dissolve, and then you drink them. It's intended to be consumed by those seeking spiritual benefits. Some people are saying, they're selling them also for $39. I feel like for a spiritual benefit, you don't really need to spend $39, but maybe
it's
that's
an odd
me.
One, isn't it?
It isn't.
Isn't it though?
I can tell by your facial expression, and those listening on the podcast can't see it, but it's
just
an odd
one. I mean, like at some level, like you would hope that they're trying not to be offensive, because we do see, and I don't get it. Like,
I don't think they're trying to be offensive here, because some people are arguing in the comments that, you know, this is Sunnah. Some people are saying, no, this is not. Basically, I think they're trying to turn something that some people used to do in the past into a business model.
What used they do in the past?
Allegedly, some people would, I guess, I don't know. Don't ask me the details.
But we're assuming that they're not being offensive because in Scandinavia, yeah. So up above a little bit further from the Dutch, we see a lot of we see Quran burning and, you know, offensive things to the Prophet, peace be upon him. We see a lot of that sort of stuff. So let's just give them the benefit of that they didn't mean that. But I think if you're getting rid of or if you're, you know, dissolving verses from the Quran, I think that can be offensive. So. Yeah. Why try and profit so much from these sort of things?
You know what though, if people are buying it, then I think they've done the smart thing. Because
yeah,
you know what I mean. Are we going to blame them, or are we going to play the? Are we going to actually see them, you know, getting customers from this? Because people in the comments are already saying, yeah, cool, nice. It's a great initiative.
Yeah, well, and as long as it's not offensive, then it's okay.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So you're not into a lot of those. Spiritual kind of not religious, but are you into anything spiritual by any chance?
I mean, if I do
besides matcha and yoga and swimming around the Burj Arab on the weekends.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what do I do for that? In my background, like where I grew up and, you know, the education that I had would be part of me and would be part of that. And I definitely respect other people's spiritual and religious beliefs. But like, I don't understand everything, Lubna. And like, I don't understand this Dutch company's idea.
Yeah, yeah.
But, but look, like, let's hopefully it doesn't offend people because I think, especially during the holy month of Ramadan, I think, you know, now's not the time to be offensive.
Yeah, absolutely. Azizi developers, when they first came into Dubai, everyone was kind of arguing about their legitimacy. They have now proven themselves. The Dubai developer is going to donate 600 million dirhams, which is $163 million, towards the construction of a school complex in Dubai. This is basically because of the Mother's Endowment campaign championed by Sheikh Mohammed, that's kind of how the donation came into play, and he got the philanthropic medal from Sheikh Mohammed himself. But this is interesting. I think we do need, like we saw the Canadian universities at the Brand Ami Summit, the Canadian universities campus in CityWalk. It was pretty impressive. It was very unlike the other campuses here, but generally the educational complexes here or you know universities are pretty prestigious. Like AUD is known for having all those Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces outside in the parking lot and all of that. So did you not know that about AUD? I mean, it's good that you didn't know that.
Ali, our producer, says that it's a fact that the AUD parking lot is more famous than the uni itself.
Wow. Some very rich students there. So $163 million for a complex, that's going to be pretty luxurious.
Yeah, you know, during Ramadan, we often hear of donations and philanthropy from big property developers. Azizi obviously have been doing well. Everything in property has been doing well lately.
Yeah.
I think the whole academic system and industry, you know, the Citizen School project has been a really interesting one as well, by a very good local business person.
Yeah.
You know, we see these different types of initiatives. And I think if they're part of wider developments, so a developer building a school and hopefully it will be affordable and it will have, you know, I think there's good projects there, right? It's a good idea.
Affordable. School's affordable.
Well, we need
and the
it,
UAE
don't we?
Is, don't fit in the same sentence, which is okay. Other things are affordable here, but definitely
it'll happen.
Not the education.
It'll happen. It's just the
hopefully
it's how
by the time I have
it's,
kids.
It's how sectors grow, right? Competition is
absolutely
the fact that there are the fact that it's not a monopoly will help it grow. Cool.
This time for Abu Dhabi, the UAE capital will spend $10 billion in a tourism push to nearly double their hotel rooms in a bit to attract more tourists. Abu Dhabi's Department of Culture and Tourism will spend that much on infrastructure as part of its new strategy, and it will see the number of hotel rooms rise from 34,000 to 52,000 by 2030. And the 2030 vision for Abu Dhabi is also to nearly double visitor numbers to to almost 40 million, basically, and elevate the tourism sector's contribution to the Emirates' non-oil GDP to $24.5 billion annually. They've been doing a lot, Abu Dhabi, from opening, you know, the restaurant with Ronaldo. Cristiano Ronaldo hasn't opened yet, but they announced it. They're spending a lot on advertising.
This weekend, he's playing, Al Nassr are playing this weekend. They've moved the Saudi tournaments to Abu Dhabi, yeah. Advertising,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Wow. Okay. Yeah, they're doing a lot. I mean, they've got all the parks, the museums.
Yeah, totally. I think, you know, I think it's almost like the unsung hero of the region, Abu Dhabi. Like in the last few years, since the pandemic, where we thought that was sleeping or in a way like playing it safe. And now, you know, you and I, Lubna, have talked about the billionaires. We've talked about property. We've talked about startups. We've talked about AI. We've talked about lots of different stuff, sovereign wealth funds. And this tourism number, like, it's just inspiring. Like, I saw it yesterday and I posted and tagged Love in Abu Dhabi because I was just like, this is great. You know,
ten years of fun,
of content, of just activity and advertising and business potential. It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. It is exciting indeed. What's also exciting is to see someone from Dubai, like Supercar Blondie, succeed so much. They launched SBX Cars, focusing on classic cars. It's an auction website focuses on classic cars, my favorite, hypercars, supercars, and special vehicles. Very rare cars there. But what was really interesting in that story, and they did an interview, Supercar Blondie, Alex Hirschi, her husband, ex Bloomberg, helped her build the company. They built it together. Anyways, they said that they turned down a $100 million deal to buy the media side of the company, which is headquartered in London. Then they said, interestingly, that they turned it down not just because they want to retain control of the company, but also because they're looking to raise sometime this year an amount similar to that amount.
Yeah.
And they said that in the national... Actually, they said they're going to raise a lot more than the $100 million deal. If Nick is listening, it's in the national.
Yeah. Cool, because he kind of, yeah, so I think what's really interesting about this is, you know, people don't really hear or celebrate creators in terms of media companies.
Yeah.
And what Nick and Alex have done in terms of their page views and their video views, and first of all, the style that Alex delivers the content with is impressive, but their total reach...
Is it really?
The technique, yeah, it is. It works. Look, the numbers don't lie.
Works because there was the one in Dubai that was blonde and a girl doing this car content. So there's also a bit of luck and a bit of promotion and a bit of networking, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, I just go back to the history of media, right? Like, Sir William Randolph Hearst bought Automotive Magazine for a few $100,000 in 1902-04 after setting up newspapers. And if you look at the history of automotive media and... To have one of the biggest global players with more views than any of these famous automotive titles or any of these Top Gear shows who are all dead, no one watches them anymore, to have it built up out of Dubai with the Dubai backdrop and not just Alex on the show, to have 25 people working on the PAM to come over from Manchester, from all over the place, bookings of $250,000 of advertising from Detroit and Munich, the car capitals of the world, and Wolfsburg, right into a media company in Dubai that's headquartered out of London. It's just such an unsung hero, such a success story. And the fact that they've got any valuation above $10 million and that any interest, they deserve it. And to take the bet that Nick and Alex have done to spend over $1 million on building a car auction website on the back of having viral videos of TikTok and Instagram is commendable. I don't know where it's going. I don't know how they'll do the investment. I don't think investors find this topic and sector sexy. Yeah. We don't see it. You know, to sort of look at that and sort of disrupt global automotive media, how many, do you like classic cars? How many times do you go on Arab GT? No offense, but the legacy media stuff is dead and these guys are the future.
I don't know. I don't watch any of this automotive stuff, to be honest. But you mentioned William Hearst. William Hearst came from a rich family. His dad was rich as well. So yes, she made it, but also she made it because of 1-2-3. Just like Anas Bukhash, by the way. Anas Bukhash's content isn't mind-blowing, you know? Sometimes it's mind-blowingly boring. But why did he make it? No one was doing what he was doing. Like, let's be fair also. Is that all organic views? Like, let's just, you know, as a journalist, you do have to be skeptical, right? So it's not about hating on these new modern media companies. It is great to see, but also be fair. And also, you know, if you're a media company, how do you not know what was said in the article and what was not? Because Nick was criticizing what we wrote in the article. Check your own articles, Nick.
Some journalists misreport stuff, and maybe the National didn't get that one right. How can you raise...
It was recorded and it was quoted, and I know people at the Nationals, I don't think they would misquote that.
Okay, so just further from the Nationals' brilliant reporting of where we got this story, just Smashy Business exclusive, that they're not raising over $100 million. They're going to be raising less. That's from Nick. So it's good to have this information out there. And if they raise $10 or $20 million, that's good.
People always say things and then just back out when they see them on paper. It's incredible.
Well, you know, you know, talk about Mr. Beast before. And look, I'm not a big car fan, but I just do appreciate that you can develop media in different ways. And
true.
You know, Supercar Blondie, SB Group.
SB Media Group, yeah.
SB Media Group, yeah. Because they launched something else recently as well.
Yeah.
They launched a design firm as well.
Yeah, a design studio,
A design studio, which hires product people to help with stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, another thing that we'll post on Smashy Business soon is that the Apple have laid off 600 or 700 people, and they've shut down their car department, and they pull back from displays and things. So there's a whole thing going on with... the evolution of the automotive sector, and to have media around it, both in terms of TikTok media and stuff like that, but also Smashy Business media, where we will talk about like what are the trends, like the EV cars coming from China, like we talked about Lucid in Saudi, like an investment around that sort of stuff, because the automotive sector is evolving. And I just personally, going back to legacy media, don't think that magazines and newspapers are the best places for it.
And yet the UAE was still trying to bid for the Spectator. We're going to disagree on this, Richard. I still believe in legacy media.
You know,
I just think it needs tweaking.
Do you know how much money does the UAE, not bid for it, they won, this is what, they paid for it. The deal went through. They coughed up $1 billion to give to the Lloyds Banking Group. Now they have to spin it off and get their money back. No, they paid for it. It went through, and the UK blocked it.
Yeah.
Of course it's dead. Like, why are you $1 billion in debt? Of course no one reads The Spectator. Like, come on, it's dead.
People do read The Spectator. I read The Spectator.
Yeah, five people. No, you don't. When last you read it?
I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
Show me a copy of it. Show me a photocopy of it tomorrow.
Well, I read it online.
Do you subscribe for it?
I was subscribed, but now I use my free articles from various accounts, and sometimes I use my friend's account who is subscribed, just because I have a lot of subscriptions. I have Bloomberg, I have New York Times, I have a lot of subs.
Okay, well done to The Spectator. You've got
you've got me a Spectator. Keep going, although I disagree with Fraser Nelson most of the time. Anyways, moving on. Rose Hindi is going to join us up next about career coaching. Does it actually work? Rose Hindi with us in the studio. She's a partner at Stanton Chase, one of the leading advisory and search companies. And also she has her own executive coaching services, You Choose Coaching. Rose, welcome. And what a lovely name that is, by the way, Rose. It's very, very feminine, very lovely. And then you also deal with a lot of those grumpy executives, C-level executives, having a midlife crisis, wanting to move jobs.
Thank you, Lubna. Thanks for the compliment on my name. And yeah, they're lovely executives who are transitioning.
It's funny, and we say that it's funny even though it's not very funny, but I remember back in the day when my dad was out of a job for a very short while, and he was losing his mind at home. Men who don't have a job, men who are unemployed, or men who are just transitioning, looking to change jobs, looking to change careers, if men are not doing well at work, they are just a nightmare to deal with. You help those people. If the men are listening, we don't mean anything bad.
We love you.
We love you. We love you. How is it dealing with that? How difficult is that for the men as well? Just walk us through it a little bit. Let the men feel like they're being heard.
Yeah. So by the way, and it's not just men, It's both men and women.
Men and women.
Anyone
right, yeah.
who is in a transition,
women deal with it better. Yeah.
Yeah. They're let's say they're not in the best place, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, but here's yeah. so I'm gonna start with something else probably, and then I'll get to your answer.
Sure.
My aim is actually to preempt this. Right. So I'm like, okay. before the havoc happens and before you're too anxious about, like, now you're unemployed. And yeah. I sometimes it lands in not the best way when I say unemployed, yeah. but it is what it is. Sometimes you are that. Let's not reach this stage. Mm-hmm. Let's try and transition before there's a havoc and before you're forced to do that. Mm-hmm. Because once it happens, psychologically, it becomes harder, and then there are many boulders, and then there are many roadblocks, and they're stressed. I try to absorb that as well, and I try to structure it, and I try yeah. to be as pragmatic as possible, but the stress is gonna be there. But sure. that's my job.
Sure. Okay. How expensive is it to get executive coaching? I'm just thinking, if you're about to go unemployed, you don't want to be spending the big bucks, you know? So be real with us, Rose. How expensive or affordable is it if somebody's listening and they need the service?
I love the question. It's too candid, but it's also very practical. It's not as expensive as you think it is.
Okay.
Right?
Good.
So that's a bit of a generic answer. Yeah. But let me tell you. So I had a client once telling me, so I'm paying an arm and a leg to do that. I'm like, no, you're actually not paying an arm and a leg. It's not what you think.
Yeah.
It's costly or anything. And here's what we do. We do packages so mm-hmm. that they really suit many people. But again, it's not too not expensive,
sure.
if that's the thing.
Yeah.
And I've also thought about solutions. So people who are currently not willing to invest that much in time. By the way, the investment in time and efforts is higher than the money.
Definitely.
yeah.
Time really is money. That's why people now want to order everything online, and people just don't have the time. It's really a luxury to have the time.
You know, Lubna, so they would pay that, and then they don't show up.
Yeah,
so what exactly. I need your efforts and time. So the money is not an issue. The showing up is the issue.
Isn't that the crazy thing?
Yeah. And, you know, so I've thought even about solutions for people who would tell me, no, that's a bit too expensive for me now, even mm-hmm. though it actually isn't that expensive. Mm-hmm. I've thought about other solutions like master classes, which can be hybrid, which could be face-to-face, so that
okay.
they have no reasons
yeah.
not to do that.
Exactly. Okay, tell us exactly how do you help them? I mean, not exactly. We don't want you to give away your secrets.
No, I mean, I'm willing to do that. I always do. If you follow me or if you read my post, plenty of cues. So tell me exactly what you need to know and I'll tell you.
Okay. Let's do a little role play.
Simulation.
Simulation. Let's say, you know, I have, you know, let's say I'm a woman and I have a very high level job at a big tech company. But I see things not go, you know, I'm not happy with the job. I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. First of all, you say that you help people preempt the disaster
crisis.
Or the crisis or getting fired or whatnot. How do I know when it's time to go to executive coaching to seek that, and then how will you help me?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So there are signs, and they will be tugging at you, and I'm like, don't numb them, don't ignore them. Mm-hmm. So if you think it's a bit too toxic for you, and you've been tolerating that for some time, mm-hmm. and there will be a time where you're having something happening in your life, and you can't tolerate it anymore, this is when it flares. Mm-hmm. Don't numb it. Go assess it. Mm-hmm. If you think you're in a plateau in your career, right? So you've done what you've done. Your future boss is not your, I mean, your current boss isn't going anywhere any soon.
Yeah.
And then it's very much of a plateau. Then it's time to transition. If for some reasons this isn't aligning currently with your values, with your life purpose, then it's time to explore. And it doesn't mean that you're out of the blue, you're like open to work. Mm-hmm. But it's like you're assessing and seeing what you could do, like just exploring. And when it's time, you will. So it sounds sometimes it's like overwhelming. I'm not going to be looking for a job yet. Relax. Mm-hmm. Let's gain some clarity. Let's do some work. Let's work on your personal branding. And as we do that, let's navigate smoothly and surely your way to the next mm-hmm. role.
What if you are the problem? What if the person coming to you is the problem and not the working environment or the people? Or because sometimes that person is the problem, right? Do you help them?
Yeah, so that this that. Becomes a bit of a different kind of coaching. So it stops being like the typical transition, but then yes, we acknowledge then that they need to be working on their leadership traits, sometimes technical skills as well. Mm-hmm. So that becomes not the transition coaching, but the executive coaching. Mm-hmm. First thing first, when I start with any executive, there's something that I do. I assess them in terms of leadership traits. Mm-hmm. And that's for them to learn a bit more about them and also for me. And that's how we build the best version. We don't build it. We hone it, we curate it so that they take their best self to the next role. So yeah, there are times where we need to work on technical or leadership skills.
What is the reoccurring problematic theme that you see with your clients?
Oh, I'm going to say that very bluntly. Problem Please. With their bosses.
Problem with their bosses. What is the main complaint about the boss? Toxic or what is it?
Most of the times it's a new boss. And when there's a new boss, the okay. old team, sometimes they find it, sometimes it's them. They feel insecure because they don't know what's coming next. Mm-hmm. But it's the boss, and in a broader way, I would say it's the culture. Mm-hmm. So it would be, they're not fostering their growth. They don't have clarity on the next role. Mm-hmm. Or even worse, sometimes they have some part of their roles that is being taken away from them.
Right.
For like out of the blue, a territory, something in the job description. Mm-hmm. So I see this a lot of, most of the times.
Okay, interesting. I feel like it's definitely normal though to have that kind of, you have to adapt, right? When joining a new job or having a new boss or whatnot, right? I feel like, yeah, maybe sometimes we get into our heads too much about this stuff. Okay, interesting. I do have a question about how to deal with bosses if you yourself are a bossy person. Any advice? Because I feel like that might also be a reoccurring theme.
You know, so there's a trait, and when we talk about leadership traits,
some people can't be bossed around. Some people just, right?
I'm one of those.
Bring it here. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Actually, and that's not a bad thing, depending on what you're doing.
Okay.
So I don't currently have a boss per se.
I
work with people, but I'm one of those.
So
I can't relate.
Yeah,
but that's not necessarily a bad thing because that's what allows me to have this entrepreneurial spirit.
Sure.
That's what allows me to venture, to take risks. So we try to see where this fits.
Yeah.
There's a trait, and when you talk about the psychometric analysis and the leadership profile, which is actually captured under a derailleur, and it's called BOLD. I score 100 on BOLD.
Nice.
99 probably.
Love it.
And there are actually many clients who have like 98, 96. You know what I wouldn't say I worry, but this is something that we have to take into consideration. Once they're having a conversation with a future potential boss, right? Mm-hmm. They're transitioning, yeah? Mm-hmm. So they're having these conversations.
Yeah.
And if they research the future potential boss, and we know in a way or another that this is also a bold boss, we make sure that once you go to this conversation, we don't want to pretend that you're someone who you're not, but we want to take good care of that.
Absolutely.
I had a client who was 100 on bold every time before she goes and have these conversations. I'm like, listen, don't ruffle feathers. Be confident, not swagger. There's a difference.
Nice. Okay, okay. I'm constantly being told, like, Lubna, don't be, what is it? It's like a word similar to aggressive, but it's not aggressive. Like, be passionate, but don't be aggressive. And I'm like, well, I feel like if I'm passionate, I also am kind of aggressive, you know? It's hard. It's a tough world out there, Rose, but enough
about
me. But
that could serve you. I mean, if you're starting a brand new vertical, right?
Yeah.
And you're doing things, so you have to be bold. Again, it depends on the role. It depends on the culture.
Yeah.
Many things.
Absolutely. Totally agree. Right. You talk here a little bit about how can executives ensure financial cushioning when they are in transition? That's a big pain point for people.
Yes.
Help us and our listeners and our viewers.
Yes. I remember the very first question, which was, how do you deal with, what did you call them? Grumpy?
Grumpy, yes.
Who are transitioning. And yes, finances are a very big hurdle. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. Transition while, and I don't mean to be bad or anything.
Transition, I mean, I would be grumpy too if I didn't.
Yeah.
You know?
So transition while you're still on a payroll. Mm-hmm. You're not being dishonest. You're not being unfaithful. Yeah. None of these.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can even share that openly with the mm-hmm. organization. Like, it's not working for me. I might probably exit within 6 months. I hope they don't make you redundant before that.
Yeah.
But I mean, even if you're struggling
I
with
hope
that.
So too. Are we talking about me? Because
sometimes they know you're exiting anyway, right?
Yeah.
Or they tell you it's going to mm-hmm. be in 6 months or a year and you have to revisit. Mm. So before you have like just 3-4 months where you could sustain life, and if you're in Dubai, you know what I mean, or even in any other region.
Yeah.
So yes, so when I say cushion, like make sure that you don't take decisions because your bank account is flat. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to settle. You were doing all this work because ideally I would want you to land your dream job. And yes, they do exist.
Yeah.
So let's make sure you're not deciding, you're also deciding based on your values, your life purpose, many other things, not just the finances.
Absolutely. So putting emotions on the side basically is what we're saying, and trying to be more logical. This affects a lot of people's personal lives. The job, the career, the pressure, the stress at work. Do you help people kind of deal with, you know, keeping a balance and disconnecting after leaving the office? Can we ever actually disconnect?
Of course you can. And let me ask you this question. If you're happy doing what you're doing, do you really need to disconnect?
Love that. I love that. Yeah.
So why don't we reach a stage where we decide that we're stopping like the meetings, the work, because we have other things to do. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, oh my God, thank God it's 6 p.m. and I'm going to put this on silence and I can't believe I'm going to be seeing them the next morning.
Yeah.
Then this is when you need to transition.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So the work-life balance is a bit of a myth.
Yeah.
You spend practically 75% of your time at work. Why don't you make it fun? Why don't you make it enjoyable?
Definitely.
If you're waiting for the 6 p.m. when you're on your couch, no energy, no nothing, mm-hmm. or for the weekend, and then on Sunday afternoon, you're like, oh my God, am I doing this all over again?
Yeah.
So this is when we don't want to reach there. And this is where I'm actually very big on this work. When we say work-life balance, to me, I have another motto, which is like, work playfully, so that you don't need to work hard, play hard. That's a bad thing. Don't.
Yeah, because eventually you'll
playfully.
Crash and burn.
Yeah.
I love that really fresh perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that you don't actually have to disconnect if you love your job and if you're doing what you love. Yeah, you don't really have to disconnect. I really like that.
I put an effort to say, okay, and sometimes I'm also tired. Yeah, but if I'm not, I'm like, I have to stop that because I want to go to the gym because I have it slotted on my calendar. So I actually have like FOMO, but in a good manner to stop doing what I'm doing.
True.
And that's my purpose. If I help as many as possible people reaching this stage, then that's brilliant.
Yeah, I love that, Rose. I have so many more questions, but we are running short on time. I would have loved to continue this, though. I'm sure we'll have you with us again on the show. I still have a lot of questions for this. Rose Hindi, partner at Stanton Chase and founder of You Choose Coaching, her own executive and career coaching platform. Get in touch if you need her help, and I think we can all use a little bit of Rose's help.
Thank you so much, Lubna.
Thank you so much. Listen to us wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on smashy.tv for the visuals. Thank you.